Today's daf in Masechet Sukkah, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Yud Gimel, and we are holding on Omer of Gidel Omer Rav, which is the fifth line from the top. Omer of Gidel Omer Rav. So yesterday what we were talking about was the Gzerat Otsar, that anything that is a chavilah, anything that's a bundle, that might be brought in order to dry out, might be thrown casually on top of a patio in order to dry out, is then considered to be posel, even if it was put on top of the patio, the dafka for the sukkah. Why? Because it's so easy to get confused, and since normally things that are wrapped that way, tied that way, bundled that way, are meant for storage purposes, to be put in places where they'll be just available and exposed to the sun. Because of that, we don't let you use them even when you know exactly what you're doing. And you put it up there for purposes of schar. So that was called Gzeirat Otsar. So now we want to continue to define what exactly is meant by a chavilah. Because, I mean, we often have, let's say you'd have an avkuta de dikla. An avkuta de dikla, it's a question between the Rishonim. Rashi learns that it means the lower part of a palm tree. I'm sure you'll have noticed that many times on the lower part of the palm tree, you have these sticker things that stick out, which were originally part of the leaves that were coming out. So sometimes they actually leave them to grow out. But other Rishonim learned that even though it uses the word avkuta, it means the leaves that are coming out of the dekel. So what it would mean is that basically you cut off the top of a palm tree, and the top of the palm tree has got, you know, tons of these beautiful palm leaves on it. So now you want to use that for the top of your sukkah. That would be okay. So you say, but what do you mean? It's all tied together by the actual piece of the tree that holds that together. That's not called a chavilah, says Rav Gidel Amarav. Why? Because afagav de agida, even though in practical terms, you have over here an interrelationship of all of these leaves being held together by that piece on the bottom. But that is not called eged. Why? Because eged bidei shamayim lav shmei eged. Something which grows that way is not called a chavilah, that it should be part of the gzerat otsar, for obvious reasons. And that's not the way you would normally buy something and bring it home to dry out. Furthermore, what we need to add is that afagav dohadar agid lahu, even though in order to get all the leaves together on the same level, you took the outside part of the leaves and you tied them together so that they would all lie down flat over one area in the sukkah, and that you definitely did by using a string, right? So you'd think, okay, so then that turns it into a chavilah. No, it doesn't. Why is that? Because iged bechad lo shmei eged. The definition of a bundle is something that ties together things that are separate, but something that ties together the parts of one unit, which is over here the palm tree, basically, since we've already determined that it's not called a chavilah of different things because of the fact that its natural growth was this way. So because of that, there's no way to turn it into a chavilah by tying the other side, because you're basically tying one thing to itself. And how is tying one thing to itself a package or a bundle? It certainly is not. So therefore, it follows, even if you tie the extended branches on the outside, it would be exactly the same issue, and it would not be called a tied-up bundle. Omer of Chista, Omer of Ina Bar Shila. Now, this is basically the same thing, except that we had Rav Gidel Amarav, who was talking about the palm tree, and now we have Rav Chista, who quotes Rav Ina Bar Shila, which says exactly the same halacha. However, he's talking about cane. So cane that grows out, parts of cane, is exactly the same as the avkuta de dikla. So that's what he said. Hani dukre dekane misachachinbu. So if you've got these stalks over here of a thick cane, it's all kosher for schar, even though they're held together, obviously, at the base, because that's how they grew. That's called eged bidei shamayim. And exactly as we said before, eged bidei shamayim is not called eged. And this would be true even if subsequently you went ahead and you tied the other sides together of the canes. So you would have like a flat surface of canes. So it wouldn't make any difference, because it would be the attempt to tie together something to itself and one thing does not ever create a bundle. You can't make a bundle of one thing. So Ige Bechad, Lav Shmei Eged. And in fact, Tanya Nameyachi, there's a Braita that basically says exactly that case, except that the Braita is a bit confusing. The Braita said it like this, Kanim v'dokranim mizachachin behem. So what this sounds like is two different things. So Kanim would mean you can use cane. Why not? I mean, everybody uses bamboo. I mean, that's like popular schach, right? You can use cane. So Gemara's going to ask, I mean, it's rather obvious. And dokranim. Now, dokranim sounds like sharp-pointed stakes that you would normally bang into the ground, and over here putting them on top of your circuit. So ask the Gemara, Kanim, I don't say I need a braita to tell me that you can use bamboo, obviously. And therefore, what the braita really means is Kanim shel dokranim esachim behem, is that where you've got a piece of cane and it's like got sticks all around it. That's the point. So in other words, you took the thickest part of the cane at the bottom, and now it's split up into, 100 pieces. And so the whole thing is held together by the bottom. You throw the whole thing on top of your circuit. So now maybe you've got 100 pieces of cane that are all mechubar underneath to that bottom piece. Nonetheless, it's kosher, and that's exactly what we just said. So basically, now we have a braita that supports the two shitas that we're saying, that it's not considered to be eged if it's a good bidei shamayim. Okay, well, we spoke about Rav Chisda, who was quoting Ravina Bar Shila. So there's another thing, that once we're talking about this, we added another mimer of Rav Chisda, quoting Ravina Bar Shila. And over here, is what we've already noted that there's a tendency to relate the dinim of Pesach on some level to the dinim of Sukkah. That's because, remember, the Torah gave us some of the Ikar Halachas through a Gzera Shava of Tetvav, Tetvav, which is Chamisha Asar B'Chodesh HaRishon and Chamisha Asar B'Chodesh HaShvi'i, from which we'll learn out, we'll see many different dinim. So because of that, we've seen a lot of issues, one of which, by the way, is the concept of an Aguda, because the idea that Ezov is an Aguda, which we're going to be getting into, is learnt out from Pesach to everywhere else. Because it's only by Pesach that it says Agudat Ezov. The other places where the Torah wants to use Ezov, it just says Ezov. It doesn't say Agudat Ezov, but we learn out Ezov, Ezov, L'Gzereshava. And because of that, you'll find strange references to Morar in Masechet Sukkah. So one of the other things that Rav Chisda and Ravina Bar Shila said was that if you've got Mirirata de Agma, so you've got this bog morag. So it grows in a bog, and it's called, what we think right now is that it's the name of the species, bog morag. So Odom Yotzbe Midei Chovato BePesach. That's perfectly okay to use for morag. Rashi says that it's a reference to a kind of chazeret, which Tosfos points out is not possible. He brings rayas from other Gemaras. And in fact, Miririta is not lettuce. It's not chazeret. It's the name of a different plant. But whatever, it has over here a second identifier in the species name. Of course, we're used to, because we do that in Latin with all species, because of the fact that we have developed such a very wide knowledge and structure that we gave early on, a taxonomy. So because of that, we have these secondary names to everything. But as the Gemara is going to point out, that was a scientific development that came after Kabbalah Satera. And because of that, it has grave consequences for how we identify the names of the species that the Torah is referring to. So therefore, what we thought right now is that Mirirata de Agma is basically a two-named species with its variety. So the name is Miririta, and then it's Miririta de Agma. But the problem is that we know that we have in a Mishnah coming up in the Goyim, and that one of the dinim is that since in order to be Matayer from Tsaras, you need to use Ezov. So the Mishnah over there explains when the Torah said Ezov, it means the Ezov that does not have a second name for subspecies. So therefore, you cannot use Ezov Yavan, you cannot use the blue Ezov, you cannot use desert Ezov, you cannot use Roman Ezov, you cannot use any type of Ezov that has any type of modifier. So if Yesh Lo Shem Levi, if it's got an additional subspecies name, forget it. It's not kosher. Because why otherwise did the Torah consistently refer to a mitzvah of Ezov and never once mention any other identifier? So therefore, it's clear that the Torah is not accepting the subspecies identification, and you're to take what is the most common Ezov that doesn't need further identification. So then if that's true, what? So then if that's true, so then when the Torah says eat morer on Pesach, it does not mean the morer that you've identified as Merita de Agma, because that would be the equivalent of Ezov Yavan. Omer Abaye, the important principle over here is like this. Kol shenishtanesh mor kodem matan Torah, ubat haTorah v'ikpida aleha. So if the scientific knowledge was advanced enough at the time of Kabbalah's Torah, that people were aware of the subspecies, and they had suggested these species as being identifiable separately, such as Ezov Yavan, Ezov Kuchli, and so on and so forth. So then, if the Torah at that point consistently asked for just plain Ezov, then it is not included in the other Ezov, because then b'yadua that yesh lo shem levi, if it has that shem levi, then it's going to be possible. And that is a meaningful shem levi. But these types of different morers were not developed at the time of Kabbalah Satera, and lo nishtana shamayu kodem matan Torah klal, there were no subspecies of morer, there were just different types of morer. And therefore, when the Torah said to eat morer, it doesn't exclude subspecies of morer. And because of that, he was saying that the bag morer is like any other morer, and it's kosher. This, by the way, relates to a very fundamental inyan in the Torah, as the Chazon Ish points out often, and that is that the idea that the Torah has a specific definition has to be defined by the period, which is the period of that definition. So he relates this, for instance, to the dinim of treifas. So the dinim of treifot, even though things obviously change and become very different in time, there are elements that are currently treatable that were not treatable at one time. And because of that, whatever was identified as something that was the life-threatening treifa, if you hold a treifa in achaya, is the definition of treifa today, even though we know perfectly well that it is not a treifa, in the sense that we know that Yehavi Mivderle Sama would have been chaya. That is irrelevant. So the Chazon Ish relates this to the idea of Alpayim Terah, which of course takes this inyan further, because here we're talking about something which is in the Deoraisa. So if it's literally mentioned as a word in the Torah, then it's defined by the species at the time of the giving of the Torah. If it's defined by the Torah Shebaal Peh, so that you have to come along and explain what the treifot are, so in that case, the Alpayim Torah, which is the 2,000 years that were given from the year 2000, which is 1948 plus 52 of Avraham Avinu's life, which gives us the year 2000 after Briyas HaOlam, until the year 4000 is defined as the Alpayim Torah. Anything which is knowledge garnered after that is not part of the formation of Torah Shebaal Peh. That's how he understands it. In any event, so moving on with that, I understand that Yehuda has a problem now because of that haircut in wearing his hat. His head can't hold his hat anymore. What are you going to do? I suggest a wig. Okay, but remember that Eged of Chad is not called Eged, so it wouldn't be possible for the Schach when the hair grows back. Anyway, so therefore, the whole idea is not Nugea, because at the time of Kabbalah Satera, we didn't have different types of morer. Rava said, you guys are making a big mistake. We're not talking about a subspecies of morer. This morer that grows in a bog, nobody calls it Bagmorer. It's just called Marinita Stamashmayo. It's called Morer. The point is that the reason Rav Chisda called it the Marinita de Agma is he was saying that you might think that if the Morer grows in a bog, so maybe it's not really Morer, or maybe it's got too much moisture content, whatever. So he's saying that even that Morer that grows in a bog, Bishum de Mishtakach Bagma, that's why he referred to it as bog. He wasn't referring to a different species. And therefore, it's nothing to do with the whole discussion, which this discussion is meaningless. Anyway, getting back to the sugya that we said before. So Rav Chisda said that you can't take one thing and tie it to itself and call that a bundle. Impossible. Igeid Bechad is by definition not a bundle. If you have three things that you have together, then that is called a bundle. If you have two things, says Rav Chisda, then we run into a machlokas between Rebbe and Rebbe Yossi, and I'm going to show you that there is such a machlokas. And this is basically, it's sort of the Mishnah in Pora. The Gemara isn't really saying over the Mishnah exactly, it's just bringing the parts of the Mishnah that are important. Because it says in the Mishnah in Pora like this, Mitzvat Ezov, when you're going to be using Ezov over there, it also says to use Ezov, and we learn it out from Mitzrayim that it should be a Agudat Ezov. So the Mitzvat Ezov therefore requires Shlosha Kilachim, Uvehen Shlosha Givolim. So you need to have three different pieces of Ezov that you picked, and each one of those picked Ezovs has to have a seed pod on top of it, so that you have B'sach HaKol three seed pods on these three sticks. So it means in the entire aguda, you've got the three seed pods. So therefore, it's only called an aguda if you've got these three. Rabbi Yossi says, the mitzvah, I need to tell you that it's not quite so simple. The mitzvah of the Ezov up front is indeed, like you said, it's to take Shlosha Givolim. However, once you've established the Shlosha Givolim, then the Shiarav Shnayim, if one of them falls out, it still is considered to be an aguda, even if one falls out. And Gardumav, if you've been using it, and you've broken away, I mean, it's an Ezov, every time you use it, a little bit of it breaks off. So as long as a little bit is left, so you've got a stub of Ezov, it's still considered to be an Ezov. So Gardumav Kosho, as far as how much of the branch needs to be left, it's any little bit. I'm sure you're familiar with the same halakha that we have Lagabi Tzitzit, that you start off with your tzitzit, and then if some of it broke off and so on, then it would be kosher even if you don't have the eight that are coming out and so on, right? It's the same idea. Okay, so then what Rav Chisda seems to be saying is that there's a machlokas over here between Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakhama. So now what we thought he meant was, Kasalka died, and we thought that Rav Chisda explained the Mishnah like this, that since Rabbi Yossi says that if you only have two sticks that are left over in your package of Ezov, that it's kosher, so, I mean, that must mean that it was really kosher midiraisa from the beginning with just two, and therefore, if you're left with two, then it's kosher because mi'ikar adin, it's always two. The only reason we want you to have three is because, look, it's nicer to have three, and therefore it's a mitzvah l'chatchila to have three, but it would still be good, even if l'chatchila you took two. So in other words, we assumed that aliba de Rabbi Yossi, two sticks of Ezov are considered to be an agudat Ezov. That's what we thought. So if that's what Rav Chisda understood in Rabbi Yossi, so mid Rabbi Yossi shlosha are only required l'chatchila because it's nice for the mitzvah, so then that would mean that that's good for the machlokas. The Rabbanan are saying, no, you need three. And that would imply you need three no matter what. Even if you started with three, if one falls out, it's possible. And Rabbi Yossi says, no, that's not true. It's you do need three, sort of, for the mitzvah, which is a l'chatchila, but you certainly don't need it in order for it to be kosher, and therefore, if one of them fell out, two is kosher. That's what we understood Rav Chisda to be saying, and that would mean that when the Rabbanan said you need three, it meant you need three la'akev, that's the ikar definition, and if it's anything would fall out, it would be not kosher. problem is, says the Gemara, that in a Braita we see that that is definitely not the correct way to understand the machlokas of Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan. Because in the Braita it says like this, Vatanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ezov Trilato Shnaim, Vishyarav Echad. If you started with two, or you left with one, in either of those cases, it's possible. In order to have a kosher Ezov, you had to start with three. So then that means that Rabbi Yossi holds that if you didn't start with three, that would never be kosher, even if you were left with two. Now that undermines the entire understanding that we had of the way that Rabbi Chista understood Rabbi Yossi, because we thought that what Rabbi Chista is saying is, well, you could never say that something is kosher now just because it started out as kosher before. So if you're telling me that the leftover is two, you're basically telling me that Mi'ikar Adin, the beginning was two, except that we enjoyed your nicer bundle. Now we're saying that that's not true. That Rabbi Yossi says, oh no, it's an absolute requirement to say that you start with three. And all I'm saying is that once you started with three, then you've got the Shem Ezov bundle on this bundle. And then if you're only left with two, so then you would be kosher. So it had to start with two, and start with three, and it has to have currently at least two left. So Eino kosher, Ad she'tchilato shelosha v'shiyarav shnayim. So then, obviously, the Braita is saying that according to Rabbi Yossi Dafka, you do need to have three at the beginning, and it's ma'akev. Okay, then that's not Rav Chista's fault. That's our fault. We misunderstood Rav Chista, okay? What Rav Chista was saying is that's a machlokas. That's all he said. I mean, we assumed that the machlokas is that the Rabbanan required three, and Rabbi Yossi only required three for a mitzvah, but Mi'ikar Adin two was good. That was wrong. Agreed. So now what we need to say is the exact opposite. In other words, the idea over here is that according to Rabbi Yossi, beginning with three is absolutely essential, and otherwise it'll never be kosher. So now, if that's the case, the Rabbi Yossi Shlosha is the one who holds that Shlosha is Lakev. And when the Rabbanan said, Stam, you need three, and Rabbi Yossi came along to explain what that meant, he was saying that you should know you need three even in order to make the two afterwards kosher, which the Rabbanan did not hold. They held you need three, la mitzvah. And in fact, there's a Braita that says exactly that. That means now we finally have figured out what the real machlokas is. The Braita says like this, an ezov shetchilato shnayim v'shiyarav echad kasher. Now, look at this Braita, because it is not true according to anybody the way it was originally understood. If you start off with two branches in an egudat ezov, or you start off with two and you're only left with one, that's perfectly kosher. What makes it possible? It's possible only if you started and ended with one. What? Wait a second. You just said a moment ago, I don't understand. A moment ago you said shiarav echad is kosher, and now you're saying it wouldn't be possible unless it started and ended with one. Shiarav echad pasul, didn't you just say shiarav echad kasher? So obviously what you're really trying to say is, not that it's two, you started off either, right? But it means if you started off at the beginning with only one, so then you're trying to make the beginning the equivalent of shiarav, that would be possible. Fine. Now, whose sheet is this? Tell me. I mean, it's obviously not Rabbi Yossi. We just learned beferish that Rabbi Yossi said you have to start with three. So somebody is saying over here that you can start with two and that then you could have shirayim of one. That must be the Rabbanan, which proves that we were completely mistaken in how we read it. And that's telling us that if you start off with two, that's going to leave the Rabbanan. But according to Rabbi Yossi, you need to start off with three. And that proves Rav Chista's contention that if you have two branches in a agudah, that would be dependent on the machlokas Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan. In Masechet Parah, Dorash Maremar, we've spoken about the problem of bundles. Now, I want to make it clear that there are types of bundles that are not part of the Gezeras Otsar. because sometimes bundles are formed for the simple requirement of counting and not for carrying and not for putting out in the sun. So, for instance, the Isuriyata de Sura. So they used to bind into one bundle a certain number of pieces of branches so as to sell a bundle of branches for a particular price. So it says that each one of those bundles, the customer would know that he's getting 10 pieces of wood. Fine. But then as soon as he bought it and he paid his 10 cents for the 10 pieces of wood, he would untie it and just use it for the fireplace. Or if it was damp, he'd put it out untied. It was not used to keep it permanently tied. It was just like a thread they put around it in order that people should know how many branches, that it was counted and that's what they're buying. That's all. So over there, Afagavda Agadan, see, even though the seller may have tied them together with a thread, it's only that way, Liminyana Ba'almahuda Agadan. It's not meant to actually be a permanent bundle. Omer Rabbi Abba, there's another interesting thing. Suppose you make actually schach out of something that is tied but is not meant to be held together. So I'll give you, besides this case that Maremar just spoke about, there's another case, and that would be, for instance, you've got these hides that people make, a hunter hide or a bird watcher hide. So what is often done is you take some branches, and then you generally use like a tall branch, like a willow branch. So you'll take some branches, and you'll spread them out. You'll tie the top of the branches on top, and then you'll put like a wire in and out of the bottom to keep them spread. And then you can go into it, sit there, and you look like, you know, naturally covered with branches kind of thing. And the animal doesn't suspect that you're there with your hunting camera. So in that case, if you would use such a thing, and you want to use those branches that you put together for a hide, you want to use it for the top of your sukkah. So as long as you would just take off the knot that's on the top, it would already be kosher for schach. So kivan shutra roshema adanim shalem kisherim. But how could it be kosher? It's still a bundle on the bottom. I mean, you still pass the wire in and out of the various branches to keep them spread, and that sort of holds them into the structure. So isn't that called a bundle? V'hagidim itatai, and therefore it should be pasul. Omer of Papa, we're talking about that you actually left the wire between the branches, but you undid the connection of the wire at the end. Ravuna Bereda Rav Yeshua says, you don't have to do that. That's not the point. Once you undo the knot at the top, tell me what's going to happen when you start pulling on this to pick it up. I'll tell you what's going to happen. They're going to slip right out of the wire, obviously. The wire only works when it's connected on top, and it's knotted. This thing you can't carry. The moment you'll take hold of a branch, it'll just slip out from between the like braid-like structure that you made, which doesn't hold anything. So something that just holds in place is not called a knot to keep it as a bundle, obviously. And in that case, because kol eged, anything that creates a structure of a bundle that is not meant to be picked up, and the moment you'll try to pick it up, it'll fall apart. That's not called a bundle. That was the whole point of the gzeras otza, remember? That we're afraid that you're going to carry it, take it, put it up there to dry. If you can't carry it and take it in that fashion, so what possible problem is there that there was something holding things in a particular shape? That's not a bundle. Omre Baba Omre Shmuel, Yirakot Shamru Chachamim Adam Yotzei Bahem Yidei Chovato BePesach. Now we get into the question of whether you can use Morar for Schach. That's sort of a funny question. Why would anybody use Morar for Schach? I wonder. Okay, so now the question is like this. First, let's decide what the halacha is about using vegetables as an Ohel Atuma. Okay. So this brings us to some inyanim of Masechet Ohalot. So, Omer Rabbi Abba Amar Shmuel, Yirakot Shamru Chachamim Adam Yotzei Behem Yedei Chovato BePesach. All of those veggies that you can eat to be Yotzi Yer Chiyav of Morar, and let's say you have a big piece of lettuce that is on top of a Kizayit Minameit, so then it obviously is an Ohel. So let's say you would put a ring under the same piece of lettuce that's over Kizayit Min Amet. And what would be the din over there? The din over there would mean that it's a, you can't say midiraisa, it's not an oil. Why would it not be an oil? It is an oil, but it cannot be chotzeitz bifnei atuma. Now, this is a bit confusing. Remember that normally an oil serves in two directions, right? It spreads tuma, and it also prevents tuma from going through it to the other side. So, okay, we had a lot of discussion in Masechet Oalot of cases where something may spread tuma but can't be chotzeitz bifnei atuma. Now, one of those very important cases is where the thing that is creating the ohel is itself mekabel tuma. So we have a general rule that anything that's mekabel tuma cannot be chotzeitz bifnei atuma. So therefore, let's say you take a chair and you'll put it on top of a opening into a second story or into an attic. So that will spread tuma, but it will not prevent the tuma from going into the second story because it's mekabel tuma. However, over here, we are not talking about a case where it will not be chotzeitz just because it's a veggie, and therefore suitable for Kabbalah's tuma. The reason that it's not chotzeitz b'fnei atuma here is because of a new gezeira. The gezeira being that these type of vegetables, as they dry out, they simply shrivel up and go away. You leave a piece of lettuce out in the sun, and in no time at all, there's no zecher of the lettuce. So therefore, the Rabbanan were gozer, just in case you would rely on a piece of lettuce to be chotzitz bifnei atuma, it's not chotzitz bifnei atuma, even while it is a usable piece of lettuce. Now, the question is, I mean, why do we need the gezeira? The reason that lettuce isn't chotzitz bifnei atuma is because lettuce is mekabel tuma. Not necessarily. Lettuce is only mekabel tuma if it was exposed to mashkin. It has to be mukshar lekabel tuma. So therefore, most Rishonim learn that what we're talking about over here is the case where even where the lettuce is not roy for Kabbalah's tuma, what we're bringing out over here is the gezeira of the yibush of the lettuce. So therefore, vegetables that tend to just fade away are not able to be chotzeitz bifnei atuma, but they're still midiraisa and oil so long as they're not faded away. So therefore, we're makbid on both sides. As long as they're there, it may be a satuma. And the Rabbanan would go there not to rely on them to be chotzeitz bifnei atuma. Rashi says a very strange thing, and that is that the veggies that were identified as being roi lamorar are not considered to be a normal foodstuff because they're too bitter, which some of the Rishonim argue about bitterly. And they don't like the idea of calling moror not a suitable foodstuff. Okay, but in any event, the point over here is that we're talking about this new gezeira that tells us not to accept this as a chatzitza bifnei atuma. And what's more, there's an extension of this gezeira, the gezeira being view disappearing greens as not being there at all. And what is that? First of all, they won't be chotzeitz bnei atuma l'chumra. But secondly, if you use them as schach, then they are not posel because of schach posel. They're posel because of avir. Now, there's a big difference. If you use schach posel, so let's say you use some metallic thing, for instance, at the corner, at the edges of your sukkah. So then you would have four amot because of dofen akuma that you can bend the wall over and it would still be kosher if it bends over within four amot to the schach kosher in the middle. But let's say you put a bunch of lettuce on top of your sukkah, you know, the sort of strange kind of images over here. So then that space is not going to be mukshar because of dofen akuma, because it's as if it's not there and therefore it's avir, and dofen akuma doesn't work with avir. There it has to be within lavud. It has to be within shlosh tefachim. That's one important difference. Another important difference is if you have schach posel will only posel a sukkah if there's four tefachim of schach posel in one place. But avir will posel the sukkah of certain sizes, we'll talk about later, if it's only three tefachim in one place. So this lettuce is considered to be avir, and it's not considered to be schach posel. So uposle besukkah mishum avir. What is the reason that we're treating them as if they're not there? Because kivan de l'chiyavshi parchiv enafli kamanda let nudami. since they simply disappear, they shrivel into nothing when they dry, so then we treat it, l'chumra, as if they've already shriveled into nothing. Because the likelihood is, if you're going to be semich on it for an hour, by the end of the hour, it's not really going to be there, and therefore there won't be anything to be chaytzitz before the atumah, and there won't be anything to be makshi or sukkah with dofen akuma. The Amar Rababa, Amar Ravuna. Now, another fascinating halacha. What is considered to be mekabel tuma, which is puzzle for the sukkah? Now, obviously, foodstuffs are mekabel tuma, right? But remember that there's an entire mesechet and that is dedicated to the concept of uktzin, and we had a lot of this in mesechet kelim, that anything that is usable as a handle. So a handle is called a yad. So anything that is a handle in the sense, in the really the modern usage of handle, which is that it's something that is used to hold on to something else, right? You can call a name a handle because of that. Nothing insulting, Moshe, please. Okay. So the idea of having a yad is fascinating, because then let's say you've got straw, but this straw still has some of the grain on the top of the straw. So now, if you're going to tell me, okay, but the grain's not going to pass, I mean, there's a couple of bits of grain here and there, I mean, that's going to pass for your sukkah. So as long as you have rove, that's kosher. We said, as long as rove's schach, that's kosher, that's going to be okay. But the problem is, how do you define that rove schach? Because if the straw is a way to handle the grains, so then you're going to have to look at the piece of straw that is usable for handling. You're going to call all of that roi l'kabel tuma, even though it's straw. So we have to determine what point is considered to be a yad vis-a-vis the sukkah. So we have an important halacha in terms of the dinim of tuma that define the fact that a yad that is not desirable is not considered to be a yad. Because the whole point of the yad is that the person wants this handle. So Amar Rabba, Amar Ravuna. Habotzer legat in lo yadot. Somebody is harvesting these grapes, and he wants to make wine out of it. The less that he has of woody matter, the happier he is. Because to throw the whole thing with its woody components into the wine press is not good for him. Because every piece of wood, first of all, is going to absorb a little bit of the wine. What does he want that for? It just makes it harder to filter out in the end. So he certainly is not interested in the least. If there were any way that he could even pick off like each grape by itself, except it's just too much trouble, but that certainly would be preferable to him. So because of that, there is no yadot in terms of tuma there. Rabbi Nashia bar Gada Amar Ravuna. So we have two ma'amorim from Ravuna. One by Rababa and one by Rabbi Nashia bar Gada, is that if you're cutting grain in order to use the straw for schach, then that straw is also not considered to be a yad for the food that's on it. So let's think about the difference between those two quotes of Ravuna. So Rabbi Nashia's quote, which is that Ravuna was talking about kotzer for schach, he would certainly agree that if that is not considered to be a yad, for sure, a botzer of grapes, the woody pieces would not be a yad. Why? Because for sure you don't want grapes to have anything on them because they're going to absorb the wine. Delo nechale. You're not happy. Delo nimtzayu lechamre. You'd much prefer that there wouldn't be any of the wood. Whereas Rabbi Abba, who quoted Ravuna as talking about botzer, that might mean that only botzer does not have yadot, because there they are really detrimental to you. But kotzer does have yadot. Why? Because there is some value to it. And the value to it is, the nechale, the lisachich puhu kiecha de lo livadran. You would prefer to make this your schach with the grain, because the top of the straw, which is the shibolet, is the only part that's heavy. And therefore, that will keep the straw on the sukkah. In which case, you still want the straw to be connected to the grain. That's how Tosfos learns. Rashi apparently doesn't like that pshat, because in order to be a yad, it doesn't matter if you're happy for it to be there. You need to be happy about the fact that it's still accessible, that it's attached. So Rashi understands that the point over here is you're happy to use the straw that's attached to the grain, because if you had to remove the grains at this point, you would end up losing all of the grains and they would just scatter. Whereas like this, this straw holds onto your grain so that after Sukkot, you're going to be able to have your grain and you prefer not to deal with it right now. So therefore, it's considered to be usable at some level. And maybe Ravuna was only willing to say where it really hurts you. And your mamish would rather, if you could push a button, you'd get rid of it. But over here, even if you could push a button, you wouldn't get rid of it. Wait, so is it possible then that what Rabbi Nasha Bar Gada said is actually a machlokes tanoim? Because, I mean, it does say in a braita like this, if you've got these branches from a fig tree. So remember, Rabbi Nasha Bar Gada was the one who said, we're calling it Rabbi Nasha Bar Gada, even though he said in the name of Ravuna, because he's the one that said that even when it comes to schach, it's not a problem of yodas. So it says in a braita like this, you've got these fig branches, and there's figs hanging on the branches. Or you've got these vines, grapevines, and there's still grapes on the branch, on the vine. Or you've got straw, and you still have grain on the straw. Or you've got mechabdot. Mechabdot are the brooms we call mechabdot, because very often they use the date broom. If you've seen it, it's literally like a broom. And they still have dates on them. So then the halacha is that if the psolet is meruba ala ochlin, then it's kosher. So if the part that you're going to be throwing out is more than the figs or more than the grapes or more than the shibolim, so then you can use it for schach as is. But if not, it's pasul. Note that it doesn't say a word over here about any yadot. Acherim omrim, however, there's another shita that says, no, you have to have the part that is straw or branch or whatever it is, it has to be merubim both on the adot and on the ochlin. Because remember, to be a yad, it's not that the entire long piece of straw that may be a meter long is all going to be a yad. The part that's a yad is only the part that is close enough to the food that you actually would use that to handle the food. But in order to establish the rove, you'd have to take into consideration how many figs there are and also how much of the branch is usable for you to handle the figs. So then what we seem to be saying over here is that there's a machlokas tanoim. The Tanakama says you don't have to worry about the adot, and only the part that is food is the part that's mekabel tuma, since your plan is to use this for schach. And the Acherim say, no, there is. So then that would mean that what it was that Rabbi Nasha said in the name of Ravuna boils down to a machlokas tanoim, which is what's really weird. I mean, so my lav baha plige. Apparently, mar savar yesh lehem yadot. So apparently the Acherim hold that there are yadot, even for schach, umar savar ein lehem yadot. So, I mean, look, I mean, Reb Abba is certainly going to say that it's a machlokas tanoim. Because, I mean, according to Reb Abba, he holds that only botzer legat, only grapes, are very important not to have the wood in it. And that's why there would be no yadot. But he held that when it comes to the question of schach, there are yadot. Okay, so then he's only going about like the Acherim. There's no way out of that, right? So he for sure is going to have to say, well, it's true. You brought me a braita. The Tanakhama disagrees. Okay. The Tanakhama says there's no yadot. Even where somebody cuts something for schach. But I don't hold like that because I hold of the Acherim. So you can't ask me a kasha. But the question is, must we conclude also that according to Rabbi Nasha Bar Gada, there's no way out of this and that it actually is a machlokes tanoim? Because we do find the Acherim is saying that there are yadot for someone who is kotzer l'schach, or is there a way out of it? Omer lecha Rabbi Nasha, no, there's an easy way out of it. The Acherim agree with this also. Nobody disagrees with me. Kulei alma sover kotzer l'schach ein lo yadot. Actually, everybody agrees there's no yadot by schach. You know what the case was over here? It was a different case. Where you initially cut off this straw with the shibolim, or you cut off the figs, fig tree with the fig branch with the figs, or whatever. Initially, the reason that you cut these things down was because you were going to use it for food. So we're cut it on la'achila, and then you realize, you know, I'm not going to really need this before Sukkot. Why don't I just use it for schach? And then I'll eat it. So then it was nimlach aleim l'sichuch. Now that case, the Tanakhama says, that even though you were originally intending to use it for food, which means that there were yadot, you can cancel those yadot by the change of intent. And therefore, there's no longer yadot. And vis-a-vis the schach, all you have to look at vis-a-vis the schach is the actual food and not the yadot. But the Acherim say no, because since you originally cut it for food, so it retains the din of yadot. But in the case that I was talking about, where you went l'chatchila and you cut it for the purposes of schach, nobody holds that there's yadot over there, because there was never a time in which the yadot were desirable to you. Says the Gemara, how can you say that? If it would be initially katsutz la'achila, how could the Rabbanan disagree? Because what are you saying? You're trying to tell me, v'chi temi, you're trying to tell me that the Rabbanan say, look, yadot have to do with your intention of convenient usage. That's the definition of yadot, right? So then, maybe the Rabbanan hold that the change of intent, kiven de nimlach aleim l'sichuch, the change of intent is sufficient to be mevatel the original intent. I mean, it's just one intent against another intent. So what's so amazing that we hold that it loses the name of yadot once you're not going to be using it for yadot? Isn't that very reasonable to say? No, it's not. And the reason that it's not is because of the Mishnah in Kalim, which of course is one of the primary Mishnayos in Kalim, that machshava cannot cancel a machshava when it comes to the dinim of tuma. Umi batalei machshava ba'achi, can you simply cancel your initial intent? V'atnan, it says in the Mishnah in Kalim, that kol ha'kelim yordim lidei tuma b'machshava, but eino limi tuma tamela b'shinui ma'aseh. Your original machshava, let's imagine a case like this. You've got a piece of leather, and now you work the leather, and it is now usable. But the question is, what was your intent, right? So if you had worked the leather to use it, let's say, as a tablecloth. Okay, so then at that point, as soon as I did the tanning process, so now it's perfectly a kli. This is what I wanted it for. Suppose after I had that in mind, that that's what I'm going to use it for, I decide, you know what? I'm not going to use it as a tablecloth. This looks like a beautiful pair of sandals to me. I love these colors. So now you're going to turn it into sandals, or you're going to turn it into shoelaces. So that's not going to change anything. Because once, and we're not talking about that it was mekabel tuma. That's obviously, you can't get rid of tuma by deciding I'll use it for something else. They're only talking about whether it's roy lekabel tuma. So once a kli entered a state in which it's roy lekabel tuma, it remains in that state until something is done to it. So if I take a knife to it and I cut out the shape of a sandal, yes. So then until I finish sewing the sandal, now it's not going to be roy lekabel tuma anymore. But that's because a maisa was done to be mevato the machshava. But a machshava alone cannot cancel an original machshava once that original machshava made it roy lekabel tuma. And the klal, therefore, is everything is yored lidei tuma b'machshava, but it's not olin mituma unless it's b'shinui maisa. Because a maaseh can actually undo both a previous maaseh or a previous machshava. But just the machshava cannot be motzi anything. Lo mide maaseh and not even mide machshava. So how can you explain the Rabbanan? If you claim that we're talking about a case where originally the ketzira was done for achila, so then at that moment you created a yad. So how did you cancel the yad by just deciding, okay, you know what? I'll use it for schach. That doesn't work. Okay. Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, wait a minute. The Mishnah and Kalim are talking about Kalim. I mean, Kalim, yeah, I understand Kalim are like really important kind of constructs. So maybe that's only Legabe Kalim. I mean, a Yad, A yad is just a question of the usability of things. It's a convenience. That's all that it is. So either it is a convenience or it's not a convenience. But it's not a convenience and it's not a yad. That's what you're going to tell me. How can you bring a raya from the Mishnah and Kalim that's referring to actually defined objects and apply that to something which is not a defined object? It's just something that's attached to an object that gives a certain level of convenience. Aha, I knew you were going to say that, and you're wrong. Because v'chitim, if you try to tell me hanimili kelim dechashive, ma'ashenken yadot, which is just useful because it helps me handle the food, so it's tzorach achila ninu. So maybe over there, machshava made it a yad, and machshava undoes it as a yad. Maybe wrongo. Because look at the Mishnah Uksin. The Mishnah Uksin says ko yadot ochalin shebisasan bagoren tohorot, any yadot that you went ahead, use, let's assume right now the word bisasan means you busted them up. So it would be the same letters. You were bisasan. So you busted them up on the floor of the goren, then they're not going to be makabel tuma. And even, we'll see what the definition is of machlokas in a moment. And Rabbi Yossi says, nope, they're still going to be tuma, even though you busted them up. So bishlob alamandi yomra bisasan itir Agudan. Look, I mean, if we're going to see in a moment that there is Iman Yomar who says that busted them up doesn't mean that you literally crushed them. Busted them up simply means that if they were tied together, you untied them. Okay, so then fine. Then you can still claim that just thinking can undo a previous thought, because obviously just untying something is not a change in the object that's going to be makabel tuma. It's just an expression of a new thought of usage. So then fine, then I cannot prove you wrong. So the Tanakhama would then hold that indeed it's true that a makshava can be motzi mide makshava if you're talking about yadot. So fine, so maybe that's actually what the Rabbanan hold here. But what about according to the Man the Omer, as we'll see in a moment, who says that the meaning of bisasan is you literally busted them up, you crushed them. You had animals walking over them and breaking them. So if bisasan means bisasan mamash, so then that would mean that even the Tanakhama holds, you need to actually do a maisa to undo the status of yadis, right? So then, how are you going to explain the fact that we're talking about over here, where you originally you were kotzer to eat it, and then you changed your mind, and now you're going to use it for schach, and that itself is enough of a change of intent to give it a din of no longer being a yad? There's nobody who holds like that. Answers the Gemara, because here in our brisa, we're also talking about where you literally went ahead and bisasan. That's why the Rabbanan said there's no yadot. I mean, if you were literally bisasan, how could the Acherim say that they're usable? What's usable about them? I mean, obviously, you've just shown that there's no interest. Ah, because the Acherim, they hold like Rabbi Yossi. Because remember the Mishnah we said before, we never explained why, okay? So now let's turn back and look at Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi said that in the case of the bisasan on the Goren, that Ein Achinami Rabbi Yossi holds are still considered to be tame. We'll see in a minute why. So the Acherim can simply hold like Rabbi Yossi, that Bisasan does not take away the din of a Yad. No, that's not a good comparison at all. Because Bishlam Ahatam, time of the Rabbi Yossi, I understand that in the Mishnah where we're talking about where something was crushed by animal feet on the floor of the Goren, the reason that Rabbi Yossi would say that it's usable for a yad is because he holds that it's chazan like Reb Shimon ben Lakish. Because Reb Shimon ben Lakish pointed out that straw, even if it's been busted up, is still very useful. Why? Because in order for you to do the threshing, you're going to need to get a handle on this stuff with your pitchfork. I mean, if you try to put a pitchfork into a pile of grain, you're not going to be lifting up very much. The grain will just fall through between the various tines of the pitchfork, right? So therefore, says Rav Shimon ben Lakish, look, it's very useful. I mean, you're going to put in your pitchfork, throw it up in the air, and then you're going to be getting your the entire winnowing process. So obviously, you need it. So that would be why Rabbi Yossi would say over there that crushed straw is still very usable. But over here, where we're talking about in the Braita for schach, what exactly is the use of it if it's crushed? And why would the Acherim say, well, it's the same thing that we learned over there in the Goren. No, it says the Gemara, it's also good because, look, basically, when you tear your sukkah down, it's going to be very convenient for you to be grasping at straws. So just in case you hold that this is grasping at straws, it is. And because of that, that's obviously where it comes from, the dinim of Yodai. So just remember, every day we get like an insight into a popular idiom. So therefore, it's still useful to be grasping at straws. Okay, but let's just get one moment. I want to finish up to the, we keep referring to this machlokus about what b'sasan means. Where did it say that? Well, we said, koyadota ochlim. We said that in the Mishnah, that you were b'sasan begorna torod rabiosi mitameh. What exactly is the definition of b'sasan, is my question. I'm only going ahead because it's a big daf, and I thought it would be kedai for us to get to the Mishnah. If I know it's a little bit too late, but let's give it another minute, see how far we can go, okay? So, what exactly does b'sasan mean? Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says it means busted, man, busted. And Rabbi Elazar says, no, it just means you loosened the knot and you let them loose. So Bishlam the Rabbi Elazar Amar b'sasan only means that you were matir the knot. So then, okay, it makes sense that Rabbi Yossi would say that the yodas are still tame. You did not make a change in the actual object. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says it means you literally crushed them, so then why in the world would Rabbi Yossi be metame? That was where Reish Lakish said what we said before, that you need to have straw there in order to pick it up as a pitchfork, whereas otherwise you won't be able to pick it up. How are you going to turn over the grain? Omar Rabbi Elazar, Lamanim Shalatvilatan Shotzadikim Ke'eter. We find that Yitzchak Avinu Vaye'etar Lo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered him, Vaye'etar Yitzchak, Neged Ishto, right? What's the Vaye'etar? Vaye'etar. Why is everything in terms of pitchforks? How did that happen? So Omar Rabbi Elazar, Lamanim Shalatvilatan Shotzadikim Ke'eter, Lomar Lacha Ma'eter Ze. Ma'apechat ha'tfuah begoren mimakom l'makom, af tfilatan shel tzadikim, ma'apechat da'ato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mimidat achzariyut u'midat rachmanut. So it's the same way. The power of the tefillah of Yitzchak Avinu was such that it could actually, the same way that you understand that you have a physical shlichas yad on physical objects to be able to turn them upside down, so too, the tefillah of a tzaddik is literally almost the same as a physical capability to switch something around. And therefore, when Yitzchak Avinu is mispalo, it turned around HaKadosh Baruch Hu's midais kaviyochol from an achzoriyut to rachamim. Beautiful ending. May we be zocher to change all achzoriyut in the world to rachamim.